So this is the incremental, starting at 100 and going up to, I believe, 290. So it is, it says 20 minutes, so we've just about got time. We won't go over too late, or too long, I should say. So I just have one more slurp of my water and we'll be ready. Okay, this is entitled Shorthand and Its Uses. Ready. It is with a view mainly of assisting those who may desire to enter upon the study and practice of shorthand as a means of livelihood that this book is written. And I desire, in the very first chapter, to lay it down as an axiom which admits of no dispute, that if success is to be attained, not only must the art itself be studied intelligently and diligently, but the same intelligence and diligence must be devoted to other subjects, that the general field of knowledge should be as widely cultivated as possible, that no opportunity should be lost of adding to the stores of information already possessed. I shall have occasion to refer to this subject more in detail in dealing with the different classes of shorthand employment, but I place it in the forefront of this work in the hope that no reader will ever lose sight of it. I have no desire to discourage any who may think of making an occupation of shorthand, but unless they are willing to enter upon it in the spirit I have indicated, it is only kindness to tell them at the outset that they will do much better to turn their energies into other channels where a studious turn of mind is less essential to success. To many this seems too obvious to require anything more than a passing reference, but long experience has taught me the necessity of enforcing the lesson, especially on young beginners. As an old shorthand teacher, a professional shorthand writer and reporter for many years, and a public shorthand examiner, I have over and over again witnessed the most lamentable failures on the part of young aspirants to shorthand employment, even in its lower departments, arising mainly, if not entirely, from the want of a good general education. It is perfectly true that I have known excellent reporters and shorthand amanuenses who have had very little educational training, but they have had exceptionally good natural abilities and have done their best by subsequent practice to make up for early deficiencies. I would not say a word to discourage any such students. I would rather do my best to lend them a helping hand, and these pages, I trust, may be of some assistance to them in their efforts. I simply want gently but firmly to warn off all who have no love of books and no desire for mental cultivation, with the assurance that they will never rise beyond the lower rounds of the shorthand ladder. This book is not intended to be a history of shorthand, but it would hardly be complete without a few words as to the origin and subsequent development of the art. Like the origin of ordinary writing, the invention of stenographic symbols is involved in some obscurity. The earliest use of shorthand characters is commonly attributed to Tiro, a liberated slave of Cicero, to whose list of shorthand signs Seneca is said to have made a very large addition. Others have given the Greeks the credit of the invention, and because it is said that Xenophon took down in notes the sayings of Socrates, have arrived at, as it seems to me, the rather rash conclusion that he wrote in shorthand. It is also stated that Ennius, probably a Greek, when at Rome in 150 BC, drew up a list of 1,100 shorthand abbreviations for common use. But the statement wants confirmation. Others again, like M. Guinin, have carried back the origination of the art to a still earlier period, and from some real or supposed similarity of the Roman notes or to the demotic writing of the Egyptians, have concluded that the origin of the art, like the origin of modern alphabets, is to be attributed to the descendants of the pharaohs. It is unnecessary to enter into a discussion of this rather complicated subject. It is certain that shorthand was largely used among the Romans from an early period down to as late as the 10th century. The art is referred to by many ancient writers, and some of the Latin poets have fully availed themselves of the license accorded to their craft in their eulogiums on the marvellous feats performed by the Roman naufarii, or stenographers, who were said to be able to outstrip in speed not only verbal utterance but thought itself. It is scarcely necessary to say that this is a mere flight of the imagination. The characters that have come down to us clearly indicate a very rudimentary state of the art, and this is further evident from the fact that the orations of Cato and Caesar on the subject of the Catiline conspiracy were taken down in shorthand by several reporters, each of whom, according to a plan devised by Cicero, wrote a few words beginning at a prearranged signal, and was followed by the others in rotation until his turn came round again. That even these reports, taken with so much elaboration, were not verbatim, may be gathered from the circumstances that Sallust, in recording them in his history, says Caesar, when it came to his turn, spoke some such words as these, and Cato, being asked his opinion, delivered an oration something like the following. But shorthand was not only used for the purpose of reporting speeches. Several of the emperors practised the art and wrote their memoranda and instructions in abbreviated characters, perhaps as much to secure secrecy as to save time. Even the shorthand clerk, thought to be a product of modern days, was not unknown in the Roman Empire. Pliny the Younger, speaking of his uncle, the great naturalist, says that he was in the habit of sitting with his books at his side, his tablets, and his stenographer. The discourses of some of the early fathers were recorded by means of shorthand, and one of them, Gregory of Nazianzen, in his last words, unlike some preachers of modern days, expressed his gratitude to those who had thus preserved his public utterances for the benefit of the church at large. The practice of shorthand, however, was not always encouraged by those in authority. Not being as legible as the common writing, it was regarded as an unsafe method of preserving important documents, and its use for this purpose was sometimes forbidden. Justinian, for example, expressly forbade the writing of his codex in catches and shortcut riddles of signs. A curious story is told of a shorthand writer who reported the trial of a centurion for refusing to become a soldier on his conversion to Christianity. Being displeased with the sentence of death passed on the prisoner, the reporter flung his tablets at the head of the presiding magistrate, who straightway inflicted upon him a similar penalty, the appointed executioners being his own pupils, who were to use their iron styluses in carrying out the decree. Many specimens of the Tyronian notes have been preserved. They appear to be a mixture of alphabetic, syllabic, and ideographic symbols. The forms of some of the letters are apparently abbreviations of the corresponding letters in the Greek or Roman alphabet. They have a clumsy appearance and, as compared with modern stenography, seem ill-adapted for easy and rapid writing. Single letters are employed to represent entire words, and all long words are greatly curtailed, only a few of the principal sounds being indicated. Very little use seems to have been made of shorthand after the 10th century, until the revival of learning throughout Europe. The Romans made no attempt to introduce it into this country. At any rate, no traces of it have been discovered. It was not until 1558 that the first system of shorthand, if it deserves the name, was promulgated in England, and that was not a revival of the ancient Tyronian method, but an original presentation. The author was Dr. Timothy Bright, a physician practising in the middle of the reign of Elizabeth, to whom the book was dedicated. Only one copy of this work has been preserved, and that is in the Bodleian Library at Oxford. Bright did not profess to write his words alphabetically. He had indeed a shorthand alphabet, but its letters were only used initially. Each letter took certain additions or modifications, and these were arbitrarily employed to represent, together with the initial stem, certain selected words beginning with the letter in question. These long lists of words had to be committed to memory, a feat which no ordinary student would be likely to undertake or at any rate to accomplish. There is no record of any practical use having been made of Bright's system, but it is interesting as the first attempt in England or in Europe to revive the lost or neglected art. The same may be said of another method that succeeded Bright's by only 2 years, the art of brachigraphy, by Peter Bales, which was equally cumbrous, crude and difficult of acquisition. It was in 1602 that the first really alphabetical system of shorthand was published in this country. It was presented in a little work by John Willis. The 8th edition appeared in 1623, Charactere, or the Art of Short, Swift and Secret Writing by Character, printed in London, by J. Wandate, and a sign of Timothy Bright, with the privilege of the Queen, forbidding all others to print the same. Modern shorthand, indeed, may be said to date from Willis. His system was alphabetical and, to a large extent, phonetic, the sound being followed in the representation of words rather than the common spelling. From his time, systems have appeared without number, all more or less indebted to Willis for their alphabetic arrangement. During the half-century following the issue of Mr. Pitman's system, the number of shorthand authors exceeds that of the two preceding centuries. Their systems are mostly founded upon the 26-letter alphabet, two or three only having a purely phonetic basis. The commencement of the professional use of shorthand in modern times cannot be given with any exactness. It has been suggested that the first piece of professional reporting in this country was done by no less a person than Bishop Jewell as early as the middle of the 16th century, before the days of Timothy Bright. That Jewell wrote some kind of shorthand, possibly of his own invention, there seems to be no doubt, judging from the description given of it in a Latin work published in 1573 by Lawrence Humphrey. It could hardly have been a mere abbreviated longhand. He was always, says the writer, a tachygraphist and a polygraphist, so that he could express many things quickly and neatly. He took down discourses almost to the word ad verbum. This author also says that Jewell wrote in certain new and peculiar small letters, the interpretation of which would require another Jewell. None of Jewell's notes, however, have come to light, and we have no evidence of the precise nature of the characters he used. One of the earliest legal bona fide shorthand reports to be found in print is that of the trial of the famous Republican agitator John Lilburn at the Old Bailey in 1649. It is described in the title page as having been exactly penned and taken in shorthand, as it was possible to be done in such crowd and noise, and transcribed with indifferent and even hand, both in reference to the court and the prisoner, so that matter-of-fact, as it was declared, might truly come to the public view. The report is given in the first person, and though probably not strictly verbatim, is far too full to have been taken in longhand. Another trial of Lilburn in 1653 was also very fully reported in shorthand, but the report seems never to have been published. A brief and imperfect account of the trial is given in a pamphlet in the British Museum, the author of which promises, by the aid of the notes of several shorthand writers, a more exact and large narrative. About this period, the reports of state trials will be found to be much more detailed than those of previous years, and to this date the commencement of professional shorthand writing may be reasonably assigned. In the report of the trial of Christopher Love for high treason, which occurred between the two trials of Lilburn, there is a distinct allusion to the shorthand writer by the Attorney General. And from other sources we learn that the stenographer's name was John Farthing, who wrote and published a system of his own, 1654. A few years later, the Popish plot trials, following upon the supposed discoveries of Titus Gates, and the two trials of Gates himself for perjury, were published at great length, and must have been very closely stenographed. The brutal remarks of Jeffreys are recorded with much minuteness, and appear to be a faithful reflection of his character. Towards the end of the 20th century, shorthand reporters constantly exercised their functions in the law courts. I have an old black letter book containing, among other reports, the case of Howard v. the Duke of York, 1683, in the course of which the Lord Chancellor is reported to have said it was a cause of moment and difference of opinion, and there are so many shorthand writers that nothing can pass from us here but it is presently made public. These shorthand writers were in all probability employed by the newspapers or by publishers who occasionally printed reports of important trials in a separate form. The shorthand writer proper, that is, the stenographer engaged by the litigant parties to take notes on their behalf, and if necessary for the assistance of the court, was then unknown. It was not until the 18th century that shorthand writers in this sense were employed to any considerable extent, and even then they were only engaged in cases of great interest and importance. Their names do not often appear, but the trial of Richard Franklin in 1731 at the Court of King's Bench, Westminster, is said to have been taken down in shorthand and translated into longhand by Mr. J. Weston, no doubt the well-known shorthand author. The earliest official appointment of a shorthand writer to take notes of legal proceedings was that of Thomas Gurney at the Old Bailey, about the year 1737. Perhaps a little earlier, by the Corporation of the City of London. His reports of the trials were printed in a periodical publication, the Sessions Papers, which has lasted to our own day, but is very little known to the general public. Thomas Gurney retained his office for many years and is said to have had the help of one or more assistants. The professional use of shorthand in Parliament is comparatively modern. It is only in the present century that purporters have been recognised and accommodated in the two branches of the legislature. Until late in the last century, the publication of the debates was discouraged and often forbidden. In 1738, the House of Commons solemnly resolved that such publications was a high indignity. Rigorous orders were often given for the exclusion of strangers, and hence there was very little opportunity for the stenographer to follow his craft in Sir Stephen's. There are indeed very early reports of speeches in both houses, but these could hardly have been supplied by professional stenographers. It has been frequently said that the debates in Parliament in the reign of Elizabeth were taken in shorthand and afterwards transcribed into longhand. The printed volume containing these reports is in the British Museum, and anyone who will take the trouble to refer to it will see that stenography could not have been needed for its compilation. It is, as the compiler states, a collection from the journals of the House and other sources, and not a transcript of his own notes. It is difficult to say when shorthand was first used for parliamentary utterances. The early reports are too brief to admit of the supposition that they were thus recorded. Members themselves sometimes printed their own speeches or gave their notes to others for publication, and occasionally we find members taking notes of entire debates, transcripts of which have come down to us and are accepted as authentic records. Even as late as the days of Johnson and Cave, when fuller reports were given, there is little indication of the employment of shorthand. The manner in which Johnson wrote his reports has often been told need not be repeated. He used mainly material supplied by others, but we hear little or nothing of the professional shorthand reporters. There are some printed debates in the House of Lords between 1735 and 1743, being the transcript of shorthand notes taken by Archbishop Seeker. These reports, however, are so brief that they might have been easily taken in longhand, and much fuller reports of the same debate are given in the Parliamentary History, taken from other sources. Again, after 1768 to 1774, a very industrious member of Parliament, Sir Henry Cavendish, took copious shorthand notes of the debates in the House of Commons, and the transcript made partly by himself and partly by a clerk is now in the British Museum. It extends to 48 volumes, in some of which are shorthand notes written in Gurney's system. The reports were apparently intended for publication, but the intention was not carried out. Sir Henry Cavendish says, "My original design was to take down the heads only of the several speeches, but finding by practice even my inferior skill adequate to something rather more extensive, in the subsequent sessions of Parliament the debates will be found more at large and with very few omissions, except in the case of a few members whose rapid delivery outran my ability to keep up with them." He also apologises for other imperfections on the ground of his inconvenient situation in the time of writing and the disorder which occasionally prevailed, and sometimes he quaintly adds those favourite words, "Hear, hear," so frequently echoed through the House, forbade all hearing. In 1802 an Act was passed in reference to election committees, appointed to hear petitions against the return of members of the Parliament, and amongst the provisions of that Act is one for the appointment of the clerk by the clerk of the House of a shorthand writer, who was to be sworn to attend such committees for the purpose of taking notes of the evidence. From that time, the election committees, till their abolition, private bill committees and select committees, both houses had been attended by shorthand writers. Mrs. Gurney obtained the appointment, and their firm continues to this day, that is the publication of this book, to supply stenographers to parliamentary committees. The admirable manner in which their work has been done is universally acknowledged, and all shorthand writers may feel proud of their achievements. I think I rather lost the speed at the end. That was 290 at the end.